Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to today's lightning talk sessions. And we have still two free slots, so if you want to talk 4 minutes about a topic that might be interesting to this bunch, please fill the Etherpad, it's linked in the schedule. And first up, we have introduction to lightning talk. So what is it? How does it work? So we want to have many different topics shared. That might be interesting to everyone. We share this one laptop and we try to not do live presentations if we can avoid it, but if you must, then do it at your own risk. The idea is 4 minute slots with 1 minute for handover, so we can have 9 different topics, but maybe we have some shorter topics and then we can squeeze some more in. Otherwise, I will have a timer that will beep and then we switch speakers. And first up, we have on our list Jan Engelhardt with quality risk rating of retro funds. And your turn.
Welcome. Hi, my name is Jan Engelhardt. Today I'll be talking about some rescaling for bitmap funds. So if you've known this screenshot, it's been there for 20 years in our installer, and it's not all just about the nostalgic look, but also there's some practical things to be said about these fonts, such as thickness and so on. But that's a topic for another day. So my goal was to get all the bitmap fonts working in today's mostly graphical environments, because we have left text consoles almost behind us. They only survive in, for example, Xterm. And so if you try to use bitmap fonts today, you will notice a lot of roadblocks along the way. They don't do upscaling and so on. So the conclusion is that we need to convert everything to OpenType these days to make it work. We can look at, or rather I looked at, using some existing tools. One of that is the PO trace, which I think is also in Inkscape, and the results were not great if you try to vectorize your bitmap fonts this way. I tried the HQX and XBRZ scalers that have been popularized in games and DOSBox, for example, which produces quite an acceptable result, but outputs you a bitmap once again that you then still need to convert into vector somehow. It stops at 6x zoom, which I guess is enough for now, but not in the long run. And you can also see that some of the stems in the glyphs are getting quite bulgy, as in the F. And so what I set out to do is to just do the vectorization myself. That's write something not invented here. There's a bit of algorithmic. So you take the bitmap, turn those into edges, and do something with it. You end up with a usable font this way. So I have a tool which is called the VGA font assembler originally, and it can output SFD, which is FontForge's native output format, and you then can convert it to other formats such as OpenType, PFB, and whatever else it offers, including back to bitmaps. We still have the problem of addressing the staircase pattern, the jagged edges of bitmap fonts, and there was one font uploaded sometime in 2009 called Nouveau IBM, which provided an inspiration of how to improve the look of low-resolution fonts, which is to just make diagonals out of that. We can also try replacing them with curved splines instead, and then you get something like a classic macOS look on your font. Staircases we can look for the staircases either by with bitmap windows, but then I noticed I'm running into the same problem as XBRZ, in that I'm getting truncated stems and not such a great look. But the code is still there, and one can also still exercise it for fun. But I've gone to look at the outline edges instead, and then modify those if I find a staircase pattern. For example, a staircase pattern in this case is then when the direction of the edges changes in a particular way. And there are a few problem points in this still left. For example, in the isthmus point in a G, do you connect it or do you not connect it? In the 1.5 glyph, there are isthmuses in the 2 part or near the slash, and so I've opted to not connect the parts.
Next slot. Time is up.
Oh, good. Thanks for your attention. Font packs have been uploaded to a URL, and that's my time here.
Okay, Adam. Your turn. Git.
I have my own timer, so you don't cheat.
Okay.
Okay, so my name is Adam Meyer. I work at SUSE, and today I would like to talk to you about, or you can just press F. Okay, maybe not. I will talk to you about a very short story, very lightning story about Git and SHA-256. So why are you talking about this SHA-256 and anything in general? So anyway, OBS and Git, this is kind of this thing that we want to have merged for last 20 years or 10 years or however long Git existed, because we don't like Git, OBS. OBS is good for building, but the other thing is good for better at version control. And we've decided, I guess in some way, that there would be a nice challenge for us to have Git as a source control for ALP. So no more packages in OBS, but packages in Git. But can we do better than just pure Git? And yes, it would be nice if we could sign these repositories. For example, if you can check out factory and this is signed by some keys and you can verify later that, okay, this is actually the real sources for factory. But wait, there's a problem. So this is a very simple Git commit with a highlighted signature. And can anyone see a problem? Yeah? There's the problem. The tree is SHA-1. So, and it's actually SHA-1 all the way down. It's like turtles, but it's SHA. So SHA-1 all the way down. And why is it a problem? When you sign a SHA-1 hash, you're basically just trusting this SHA-1 as your base security level. So if your signature is SHA-256, 512, doesn't matter, your SHA-1 is what you're trusting. So can we improve this? And for a number of years already, Git has introduced this object format with SHA-256. So everything in Git is now SHA-256 all the way down. Problems again. There is no interop with SHA-1 repositories. This is planned, but not yet implemented. So upstream implemented all the SHA-256 in Git tools, but SHA-1 interop, okay, it's waiting for patches and motivation, I guess. And I guess there's no such motivation because if you go to GitHub, GitLab, Pagger, anything, you try to import your SHA-256 in their repository, it will, until last month, GitLab would give you error 500 and it would DOS your account. GitHub, I didn't try to lock myself out. Pagger will give you blank page. Gitty gave you also blank page. But over the last few months, we've been a little bit busy. And now we have a Gitty patched with a work in progress upstream patch that has this working. So you can go to gitty.opensuse.org, log in with your OBS password, and make SHA-256 repositories there, or SHA-1, and it should work transparently for you. So now you have this thing that works, that looks the same, but you have a tree that is SHA-256. And since it's a lightning talk, I even have a demo. Let's see, let's click here.
A few seconds.
Where's the full page?
A tip.
Which one?
Touchpad.
Okay. So this is our SHA-256 repository. If you mouse over it, on the bottom, I guess, you see your SHA-256 hash instead of SHA-1, and you click on there, or
tip.
Oh, tap only, okay. and it loads, and everything should work. And yeah, you should not see any difference. So if you have any questions afterwards at lunch, you can come and talk to me. And if you have any problems with this work in progress, yeah, also please get in touch with me. And yeah, start testing.
Yeah. Okay, next up we have Christian with Apomodi. It's PDF here.
So I want to talk about the Apomodi project, which is, let's say, testing. It's my current playground, and maybe you know that 640 kilobytes are enough for everybody, but 640 Apamor profiles are not enough for everybody. And therefore, Alexandre thought, let's create 1,150 profiles, so for lots of programs. And I checked on my laptop yesterday, so I had 145 processes with profiles applied, and only 55 without, and, well, not counting the kernel processes. So these profiles are not finished yet, so work in progress, especially in the area of KDE, because they are quite new. So I still get audit log entries, but things improve. So, and if you want to test yourself, then one option is to get the profiles from the upstream GitHub repo, and the other option is to take the package from my home repo. And one note, these profiles are packaged in complain mode, so they will not actually block anything, but only create log entries. And I hope that I can switch to enforce mode one day, but probably not in the next 4 weeks. So that's that one. And as a little bonus, I also looked at Apamor in ALP or Grossignol. And, well, actually it's quite easy. If you choose edit in the bootloader, then you will see security as Linux and as Linux 1. And if you just change that to Apamor, then you are done. Well, more or less. Because the ALP repo only has libAbamor and Apamor parser published. And the profiles and the user space tools for updating the profiles are not part of the ALP repo. Well, maybe yet. So let's see. And yeah, that's it from me. And have a lot of fun with Apamor.
It's even 1 minute left. That's a good one. Is Eden next up our professor? So I think Florian is in another room. So we will skip him and maybe Adam does the next one. Why I had OC?
So you should not read this, why I hate OSC. And yes, it's fine. I'm still Adam Meyer, and I still hopefully work at SUSE. So why I hate OSC, this is not about OpenSUSE conference, this is about a tool. And you have to read this with a colon. So it's colon, colon, why, colon, I, colon, hate OSC. Colon, yeah, you get the drift. And this is by colon, colon, by design. Yeah. And we tend to blame OBS for this. Oh, I hate OBS because this project separator, right? You go to some project, you check it out with the colons. Then you go to this package, and you run something in there, and you try to work with this unpacked sources. And then you go make tests, and then you end up with file not found error. And it's like, what the heck is going on? I can see the file. Why I can't see it? Like this is a MIG file, for example, can't see it or something like this. And then you'll think for a while, and then you'll think, oh, the environment doesn't work with these colons in there because the path, you cannot escape this colon, it's hard-coded. You cannot escape it in library path. It's hard-coded, yeah, it's stuck. So if any test, any program inside this unpacked repository relies on environment variables, you're stuck. You have to copy it to some other place. Thanks, OSC. Yeah. But don't worry, you can elevate your programming work to become a rock star 10 times programmer if you just use rockets. Because if you use rockets, they work with the environment. You don't have to escape anything. Yeah, the path works if you have rockets. And this feature is already in OSC and Factory. So you have a project separator. You can put any UTF here. It's a string, so you can use a rocket. You can use a Bitcoin emoji if you're a fan of that. Or you can find a colon in UTF that is not the ASCII color, but a UTF colon, so you can think it's the same. You may say, oh, Adam, this is a problem because I can't type a rocket emoji. But you can use a tab and it will auto-complete for you. So you can also still paste with a colon and it will still work. So even if you have to use a different project separator, you can continue to use colons for your OSC command and it will just substitute them back and forth when going to the OBS. So if you find any problems, send me an email and I will try to fix it. Because I've been using this already for a number of months. It's really improved my ability to run things inside these checked out packages. So you can thank OSC that it's now working properly with rocket emojis. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. And next up is one of mine. My fallback ones, because you guys didn't add enough lightning talks. Too bad. So now you need to get my. Anyway, let's do a quick one about our OpenSUSE infrastructure for the download. And we have this nice Etherpad here. Not Etherpad. What did I do? Okay, so our download infrastructure, download.opensuse.org, many people know it, has seen some growth in the last 3 years from 200K users to somewhere in a range of 700K users. So we are getting quite some load, and that load is not even out, but we have spikes in traffic. Every day we get a new tumbleweed release, and then we get a spike for the async transfers to other mirrors. And sometimes we get a big new full rebuild that's several gigabytes that first goes to the main server and then it gets synced out. Then we have leap updates and they have big metadata files and everyone pulls them immediately because there are scripts that recheck regularly. And then we got spikes, and for that we already got an extra machine called Download Content 2 that handles these spikes so they don't hit the main server anymore. And they can be quite big, like a gigabit for several minutes. And then we have short spikes because some companies have hundreds of machines and they run their SOL super ref over all of their machines at the same time. So you get some load spikes for some seconds there. And overall, we are working on improving that infrastructure. There will be a session later today at 14 o'clock in the seminar room upstairs. And there we have a closer look onto these things and why GeoIP requests are the greatest thing since sliced bread. And how it helps with future improvements. Because as you can see, when you have the default experience of download OpenSUSE.org, you go to the Nuremberg machine, get a redirect to Mirror, and then you fetch the file from Mirrors, and sometimes even in small chunks from different Mirrors, which doesn't help. So if you go to a Mirror, it can be 5 times faster sometimes, and we want to improve that. And how exactly will be discussed later. So that is the quick run about afternoon session. That will be more detailed. Okay. Thanks. So, is there no more people presenting? Come on. We still have quarter an hour, so you can get 4 minutes of speaking about a topic you like. And if you don't, then comes the next. And the next is a quick primer on reproducible builds, which is a topic I have been working on for quite a long time. Since 2016, and what is it? You have people who want to know where the stuff comes from. Why does it matter? You have these producers of stuff, and not just for eggs, but also for software. And these want to deliver their software over Git tarballs and packages over the mirrors to the users. And most of these errors we can secure with digital signatures, mostly GPG, except for the build part, where we transform sources from to binaries. And in principle, someone could hack a build machine, manipulate it, and get a backdoored binary in there, and get that published and signed to users, and that would not be nice. So what do we do? We do reproducible builds. We build packages twice, get bit by bit identical results. That's not even as hard as some people think. And in OBS, we sometimes also apply filters to strip off some stuff that's not really important, but it's not true reproducible builds. So we want this bit by bit identical ones. And then we can take inputs and do two builds and get identical binaries out, and that's what we want. And we can do even that 3 times, 5 times, 10 times, doesn't matter, because it's always the same binary, anytime, anywhere. And why? So one is a trust, but we can also reduce load in the build service, because we don't need to rebuild depending packages when something didn't change really. For our leap updates, we produce delta RPMs, they can be smaller, so we save bandwidth, and we even find bugs in the process. There's some fun bugs, like a package that produced a different result when it was full moon. that's a story I can't think of. I think it was a Hello World package that is some profile guided optimizations. And so why is it? Yeah, because people put timestamps and hostname in there, and the funny thing is that if you can produce the same binary anytime, anywhere, you don't need a timestamp and a hostname when a binary was produced. So it's somehow paradoxical. And yeah, optimization. We get all people compile with MArch native and put in invalid machine codes that wouldn't run on older CPUs. That's even a bug. And other things, Python is especially bad, because if you say, I want all C files, you get it in random order. That's not fun. And Python upstream said, yeah, we want this 4% extra performance of not sorting. So they don't. And I submitted a lot of patches in the last years. I think it's over 1,000 meanwhile. So, and we have tools to check for reproducibility, and we have slides for this presentation. So that's a 4-minute summary of the topic. If you want to do more, no more, then you can talk to me. That's it. And we still have time. And someone who wants to talk for 4 minutes. Yes, Florian. You made it. Boxes PY. We have Boxes PY here. Full screen. And my time is up.
So I just want everyone to be aware of the joy of laser cutting. For those who have seen 3D printers, they are great, but they are slow and imprecise, and lasers are fast and precise. So you can do stuff like this box in like 2 minutes.
Yeah, okay. Just closer.
Better? Better now? Yeah. And to make this easier, I have this small project of mine, which is basically just Turtle Graphics gone too far. And there's no mouse. Ah, there's. It does come with a nice. Oh God, I can't move with this thing.
A tap for a click.
Ah, how does it scroll? It doesn't.
Two fingers scroll.
Yeah. I'm deeply in this other mouse thing.
Tip on the touchpad.
So it has a nice web interface if you want to do something. We just added this gallery, which is the which I'm still fighting. So it has about 100 different types of boxes and not so much box slides, objects. Hey, it works. I totally forgot to bring some because I'm unprepared and I'm no longer in this whole conference business for a few years. So there are a couple of nice boxes. There are less boxes, and there are inserts for stuff like board games and tools and spices and wine bottles and tools and random assorted stuff. There's a small robot we have, and even more boxes. So it's in Python, there's a nice interface, you can do your own, or just go on one of those. They do have a whole set of settings. You can select the material thickness, you can select the source of your the curve of your laser cutter. There's settings for all the different types of edges and flex and stuff. There, if you can fly a 747, you will be just at home with all the settings. So that's basically it. Have fun.
Yeah, thank you very much. That sounds cool. And we have one last topic where I wanted to present little known features. We have an OpenSUSE. And now let's start. And that's the form of a video recording. And oh, come on. Yeah. So sometimes you find online guides where you have Ubuntu or Debian style installation instructions. And if you just copy and paste them into OpenSUSE, it can work because we have a super aptitude package. And it will even map package names, except we drop Python 2 and now it's named differently, so we need to update the mappings properly. And once we do that update of the mappings, then it will map Debian package names to the proper OpenSUSE package names, and you can just copy-paste Debian instructions into your OpenSUSE, and it will work there, as you can see. Another nice tool is MTR, which works a bit like ping and traceroute, but it can repeat and collect statistics about best and worst, and the standard deviation can give a nice idea of where your network is overloaded, and you can see a packet loss there that can also be an indicator of where your network is bad. So that's a really cool tool for network debugging. And then we have access control lists that come in handy when you have secret files that need to be readable by two or three or four different entities. For example, your web server here. And then you can see now the web server has read access to this one file. Many people don't know about access control lists. So that comes in handy. Then here's another. What's next? It's change ultra. We can set files to immutable so that no other program accidentally modifies it. And you can list it with lsutra and remove it again with change ultra minus e. And another tool for debugging performance issues, especially, that's vmstat. It will show memory usage, swap in out, block in out, interrupts, context changes, CPU idle, and these things. So that's a really nice overview of what happens, and it even writes this history in your shell, unlike top. And then we have one last, which is strace and ltrace, that can show you what files are accessed by any program. And not just files, it can also show you network accesses or other syscalls. For example, you can write execve in there and see what programs are executed by that. And so there's ltrace that does it on a library level. So you can see what library calls are used there, but that only works with dynamically linked programs, not with statically linked like Go or Rust. So that's all of it. Questions? So otherwise, no more lightning talks. That was it. We're done. Welcome.